Eochtanuyap, Kwiget Ewans, Kwiyen Sna. Hi everybody, my name is Kwiget Ewans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yogalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
What would you do?
You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. My name is Vesta Sahachu, and I'm broadcasting all the way from Montreal right now. Because of the very special and unfortunate circumstances we're currently in, you might notice that our audio quality is not that which you're used to. But I think that the content you'll hear tonight will more than make up for it. Tonight, we'll be broadcasting an interview I had with Dr. Marcelo Vieta about his newly published book, Workers' Self-Management in Argentina, Contesting Neoliberalism by Occupying Companies, Creating Cooperatives, and Recuperating Autogestion. You might recognize Dr. Vieta from a special CASC episode we had on the transition of businesses into co-ops. Tonight, we talk about a similar topic to that, but also relating it to our current global crisis and what we can learn from an Argentinian revolution that happened in the early 2000s. Without much further ado, here's the clip. So I'm here with Dr. Marcelo Vieta, who is an assistant professor at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education at the University of Toronto, committee member of the Centre for Learning, Social Economy, and Work. And as a researcher, his topics of focus are mainly on the sociology of work, of social and solidarity economy initiatives, the worldwide cooperative movement, and he focuses especially on worker cooperatives and worker and community recuperated enterprises. He is also my colleague on the board of the Canadian Association for Studies and Cooperation. Welcome to the show, Marcelo.
Well, it's my pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
So today we'll be talking about a new venture in your life. We were just talking earlier about how you gave birth to a new book that you just published called Workers' Self-Management in Argentina. And as the title sort of lets you guess, it focuses on the worker co-op movement in Argentina, and more specifically, the sort of radical shift that happened at the turn of the century in a neoliberal country where around 400 companies have been taken over now by their workers and turned into cooperatives. I personally haven't had a chance to read the entire thing yet, so I'll just hand it over to you if you could give sort of a brief synopsis of what happens in the book.
No problem. And I don't blame you for not reading it because it's quite big. 15 years in the making.
Oh, wow.
And I also wanted to say that the reason why we use the analogy of giving birth is because I was just came off pat leave. So I gave birth to, I assisted in bringing into the world a new daughter. And I'm just coming off pat leave. And so at the same time, I was on pat leave. My book just came out.
Yeah, so. Congratulations on both of those.
Yeah. The subtitle of the book is Contesting Neoliberalism by Occupying Companies, Creating Cooperatives, and Recuperating Autogestion. So it starts off worker self-management in Argentina, and then the subtitle. And it very much is about this movement that occurred in Argentina beginning in the mid-90s, although it has a longer, a deeper history, which we can get at later. But in the mid-90s, during a time of mid to late 90s, during a time of deep socioeconomic crisis of the neoliberal model in Argentina, workers began taking over their workplaces and converting them to cooperatives. Their apex was at the turn of the millennium, at around 2001, when it was still in the thick of crisis. And they've emerged since. And now, as you said at the beginning, there are about 400 of these worker recuperated enterprises. It's a direct translation from the Spanish of Empresas Recuperadas por Sus Trabajadores. Mm. I might call them ERTs in the interview. That's what I mean, or worker recuperated enterprises. And they've almost 100% of them, about 98% of them, have converted to cooperatives, to worker cooperatives. So the book is about that, but the book is also a political economy of the country at the time. So I look at why these experiences emerged in Argentina and why in this particular conjuncture. So to do that, I also had to look at the political economy of the country, what was happening at the macroeconomic and sociological level. Why was it that the political and economic system was collapsing? Why did it lose legitimacy amongst the populace, amongst the working class and middle class? And what was the response by workers and increasingly a mass wave of unemployed people? The response was to form social movements, not necessarily of their own choosing or because they wanted to do this, but because it was out of necessity and out of defensive. It was defensive actions to save their jobs and to save their livelihoods. Mm-hmm. Now, this happened at a time when not only was the political economy or the country collapsing politically and economically, but also people were increasingly out of jobs, unemployed, and the whole system was collapsing. And the fact that we are, and we'll get into this later, I think, but the fact that we're talking about this in our current crisis of the COVID-19 is timely, I think. And I think this book will resonate also in our current moment. But this was a socio-political crisis that was happening at the time. And so you had a contagion of bottom-up social movements emerging. The unemployed workers formed, they didn't have workplaces to strike, so they would block the streets, and they would demand the government to secure their livelihoods. They would demand that their retirement savings, for example, their severance, be recognized. At the same time, social movements of food provisioning, local food provisioning, were emerging. Barter clubs were emerging. And when increasingly small and medium-sized enterprises started to shutter more and more, workers, in some of them, would occupy them, take them over, and then eventually convert them to cooperatives. And the book is about both the experiences of these workers, how, why, and what happened when they converted their firms to cooperatives, but also situating it broadly within the history of Argentina's political economy, its history, its long history of working class militancy and strong labor movements. And in this situation of socioeconomic crisis within which they emerged.
Wow. I really want to read that book. So why don't we start with sort of the history of that then? Could you, without going too much into detail, because as much as I'd love to, unfortunately, we have a limited amount of time, but yeah, sort of like what are exactly the circumstances that led to this mass sort of revolution in the Argentinian population, and why were there so little workplaces in the first place? Why was there such an economic upheaval happening at the time?
Right. Well, we have to kind of, we can go way back to the beginning of the 19th century to understand, but we won't. And the beginning of the 20th century to understand why Argentina went in the beginning of the 20th century from one of the strongest economies in the world, the seventh largest economy in the world, actually. It was a major, an exporter, much like Canada, an exporter of prime materials, in particular wheat and meat, and other products, which also helped to foster a strong union movement and working class movement. Why did it go from this to, at the end of the 20th century, socioeconomic collapse? And my book spends time kind of walking through this history. But let me start in the, and to make this brief, I'll start in the late 80s and early 90s. The late 80s, Argentina, for various reasons, remains Argentina, came out of a situation of a very bloody military dictatorship, which basically decimated a large portion of working people. The 30,000 that were disappeared weren't necessarily guerrilla groups, but were mostly union people. This was, together with Chile, the testbed for neoliberalism. So when we think about the neoliberal form of capital, right, privileging markets, action of government protections, getting rid of any kind of regulations, as much regulations as you can get rid of to foster market activity. We have to remember that it has a bloody beginning. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, the Chicago Bull conjured it up in the University of Chicago in the 60s and 70s, but in practice it was deployed by the US as a mode of economic colonialism, in particular in Chile and Argentina. These were the test beds. It required two strong military dictatorships to do this, one in Chile, one in Argentina. The one in Argentina in this between 76 to 83 was particularly bloody. It lost its legitimacy in part because of its venture into the Falkland Islands War. But by 83, and for other reasons, but by 83, transitioned to a democracy. Yeah. But this democracy was very volatile, because the institutions that the military dictatorships of the past years had really decimated the institutions, right? So the banking system, laws, regulations, rules. It was generally a weak economy, a weak democracy. And what happened, and also it's left in shambles. The economy couldn't recuperate. And by the late 80s, there was massive inflation. This government, this first government of Raúl Alfonsín, this transition government to democracy, lost the elections to a Peronist. Historically, Peronism, dating from the 40s and 50s, had been a pro-working class, pro-work movement and party. But the version that they got of President Carlos Menem in this transition, between the first democracy and the second democracy in 89-90, was a particularly strange version of Peronism. It was a neoliberal populist Peronism for the first time. So in many ways, it transitioned into an anti-labor, an anti-workers' rights party, and a pro-business party. Now, it did this because on the one hand, it had the practicality of, when I'm talking inflation, I'm talking massive inflation in thousands of percents per year. So to curb this, it required several things. The government required to peg its peso to the dollar. So it lost monetary sovereignty. It also decided to, and kind of had to, or decided to, through these neoliberal policies, to open up the economy to direct foreign investment. Mm. This opening up of the economy of direct foreign investment directly affected small and medium businesses, and they couldn't compete. Mm. Autochthonous local Argentine businesses couldn't compete against businesses and investment and businesses coming in with foreign dollars and technology from other places. And so increasingly, by the mid-90s, businesses started to go under. Mm. Also, with the shrinking of the state, this government, Carlos Menem, decided to shrink the state. And in to do so, it got rid of most of its national assets. The banking system was privatized. The postal system was privatized. The national airline was privatized. The national oil sector was privatized. And in doing so, hundreds of thousands of people were unemployed. So you've got these national assets, these national companies, these public sector companies becoming private, and as has been in other parts of the world, unemploying people, getting rid of the cost of labor. On the other hand, you have small and medium-sized businesses across the economic sector of the country, unable to compete against foreign investment, and businesses coming in foreign businesses coming in and buying up a lot of Argentina's economy. So you have the situation with massive unemployment. We're talking 20 to 25% around that. Some estimates have estimated that the unemployment was around 30% at the time. Mm. But we have workers that were at the same time, and while all this is happening, Argentina has been in Latin America perhaps the country with the tightest, the most secure rights for workers. Right? Mm. The right to dignified work is entrenched in the Argentine economy. And also that workers have social security through their unions, right? That workers have rights on shop floors to organize democratically. This historically has a long trajectory in Argentine history. Mm. So some workers who could, for various reasons, in some businesses, decided to take matters into their own hands, and rather than face unemployment, they decided to actually occupy their firms and literally take them over, camp out in his front doors, or actually camp out on his shop floors, and ultimately convert them to cooperatives. Now, this didn't happen overnight, right? There were leaders from other social movements related to the labor movement that came and helped articulate this process. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Argentina also has a strong history and a long history of shop floor democracy. So shop mm-hmm. stewards movements, so workers organizing on shop floors and deciding the conditions of their work. This historically, since the 40s, has been the case in Argentina. So it was a convergence of all of these things. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, of a socioeconomic situation, political economy at the macro level, and socioeconomic situation of a country that was collapsing socioeconomically, but also with strong bottom-up traditions within shop floors as well. And this confluence, and together with this particular moment in this kind of collapsing of the neoliberal model, right? That what it promised, that all boats will rise, what once people saw that this was a fallacy, actually, then some workers, perhaps those that had leaders that articulated this this process of taking over factories, those that came from more militant unions, convinced their colleagues, their comrades, their compañeros, as they're called in Argentina, workmate, to get together and save their jobs, save their businesses. And there's one more thing. I know I've been talking for a little bit here, but about this. But this is, it's a confluence of things. That's why it's mm-hmm. right to describe why they emerged. At the same time, what business owners were doing, right, was practicing what are called false bankruptcies, or declaring bankruptcies, mm-hmm. and then emptying their firms or asset stripping their firms. I mean, the bankruptcies weren't false, but they had the full intention of asset stripping their firms, but taking the machines that they should have gone to pay mm. their creditors, using it to either open up shops somewhere else with cheaper labor, or else selling, coming up with a scheme with the bankruptcy court trustee to sell these machines and then pay off the bankruptcy court trustee and unemploy their workers at the same time, shuttering the firm. So these were criminal acts by mm-hmm. business owners. Workers quickly caught on to this, or eventually caught on to this. And so one workplace occupation inspired another workplace occupation, inspired another workplace occupation, mm-hmm. because these similar things were occurring. And these were the reactions that workers were learning from each other, until we get the collapse of the country, when we have, at the time, was the biggest default in 2001, December of 2001, the famous banging pots and pans and saying everybody must leave, que se vayan todos. That was the apex of also the factory occupations. And then workers got together and decided, well, what do we do? How do we manage this? And the cooperative model, it wasn't because they wanted to be cooperators that they formed co-ops. It was because the cooperative model was a convenient model to organize a self-managed workplace. Their transition to cooperators happens over time, as they organize themselves, as they learn in the moment, or learn by doing, how to run their own workplace. So I'll stop there. That's kind of the foundation, or the beginnings, or what caused. Right, what was happening at the time mm-hmm. that inspired or spurred on these this phenomenon?
Yeah, it sounds like from that description that there is something very, very unique about the specific circumstances in Argentina. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that I can see would apply to certain circumstances that we're in today. here in Canada or even in the US. I'm wondering if you see that kind of analogous sort of circumstances happening right now, and whether you feel like there could be things that we can learn from Argentina and that people should be looking at what happened in Argentina for and applying to their situations today.
Sure. So are you referring to more broadly the system of capitalism that we have today, or the neoliberal system that we have today, or are you referring to specifically our current experience right now of the coronavirus crisis?
Yeah, good question. I guess I was referring more broadly to just sort of like the neoliberal systems that prioritize businesses over workers and, you know, the discontent that comes from that. But also, you're right that there's a very specific scenario happening right now with COVID-19, where it's sort of like helping people realize exactly how these systems are put into place to not help the workers out when they might need it most, right? So sort of like, yeah, a combination of those two then.
Right. So maybe we'll take the first one. Maybe up until a few weeks ago, the experience in my mind and my book directly addresses also the last chapter, chapter 9, spends time talking about this theorizing, what can we learn from these workers, from these worker recuperated enterprises beyond the boundaries of Argentina? What can other workers' movements, worker cooperative movements, movements in self-management, social movements around the world that are directly addressing the growing situation of inequality, the growing income disparities, and even the environmental crisis that we're facing. So what can these movements learn from Argentina's worker recuperated enterprises? It's conjunctural in a sense that what happened in Argentina, one of my major questions, two questions I have that I start the book with is why in Argentina and why now, mm-hmm. right? So in many ways, it's conjunctural in a sense that it is contextual to Argentina. But in other ways, what occurred in Argentina with these workers and how this can be a way to create new forms of cooperatives resonate and echo in other parts of the world. They're relevant to other parts of the world. We know this because they exist in other parts of the world. And I talk about this in my book. In chapter two, I trace out other experiences of empresas recuperadas or worker recuperated enterprises around the world. Mm. And you also see them in Latin America. You see them particularly also in Argentina, but also in Uruguay, Brazil, Venezuela, and to a lesser extent, Bolivia, Mexico, Colombia, and other countries that were experiencing the same situation to different degrees, the same crisis of the neoliberal capitalist system. But then you also see them in Southern Europe in particular, that after the 2008 crisis went through a similar moment of socioeconomic depression and a reduction of the welfare state, for example. So you see them in Italy in particular, in Spain and in France. But you also see them emerging in the States, in the US, in Egypt, in Turkey, in Greece, in South Korea, in India, South Africa. Now these other places that I'm mentioning have maybe one or two cases. It's not a movement like it has become in Argentina. But wherever neoliberalism has hit hard the working class, and where there are experiences of a cooperative movement, where there is a cooperative form to articulate these new kind of recovered enterprises, and where there's some form of a strong labor movement, bottom-up labor movement that has helped define the conditions of work for its working people, you see instances today in the past 15 years, say, or decade, of workers converting their workplaces to cooperatives where there has been a risk of the business ending. Mm-hmm. But they've Many of them have been inspired by, if not all of these examples that I'm giving you, have been inspired by the Argentinian case, which was the first kind of contemporary case to articulate this. Now, going back, you go back to the history of capitalism, workers have taken matters into their own hands ever since the beginning of capitalism. In fact, we can fit this into the social and solidarity economy. That is, that the economy that exists despite capitalism and that existed before capitalism, where local communities and working people got together and self-organized their own socioeconomic destinies, right? Remember that the history of capitalism is not just the history of new industrial innovations and new products and new consumer markets, right? The history, when you read a history book on capitalism, mm-hmm. what we often forget is that it's also the history of responses by working people to the ill effects of the capitalist system on them. On their working lives. So the first worker cooperative, the first cooperatives that emerged were a response to the lack of reliable goods, mm-hmm. edible goods, right? They were consumer cooperatives for working people. The first worker co-ops were organized, and they predate the union movement too, right? Mm-hmm. They were organized to have more secure and better jobs for working people. And so this is also the history of our capitalist system. This bottom-up worker self-activity. The workers' recuperated enterprises, the Empresas Recuperadas of Argentina, are very much part of this longer trajectory, this long history. But they're also in our current iteration of them, a direct response to the worst effects of the neoliberal model mm-hmm. On working people. And that's why you see them also emerging in other places. Now, they emerge in different situations. And I talk about three types of conversions, and I'll mention this really briefly. If you look at the worldwide movement of workplaces converting to cooperatives, there's three types. There's what I call the labor conflict conversion, which is very much what happened in Argentina. It's when the workers are in conflict with bosses and the system, and then respond in creating and taking over, occupying. It's very dramatic, right? Taking over, occupying, and recreating firms, once capitalist firms, private firms, into cooperatives. Mm-hmm. But we also have what I call negotiated conversions. That mm-hmm. is worker buyouts, for example, mm-hmm. where workers will get together, combine their severance checks. And in a business that's closing, they'll say to the owner, look, we'll buy it off of you. Right. And then mm-hmm. they convert it to cooperative. That's another conversion. It's another recuperation, but it's not as dramatic. Mm-hmm. And it's usually it's in places where there's laws and regulations and financing mechanisms to facilitate this process. And that's the case in Italy, for example, mm-hmm. which I've done work there as well. In Spain and in Canada. In Canada, we too here have what are called business conversions to cooperatives. And I have a project that I'm working on looking at conversions to cooperatives in Canada as mm-hmm. well. Now there, it tends to be very much an owner-led process where the owner says it's a succession issue. Well, mm-hmm. I don't have anybody to give my business to, so let me sell it to my employees. That's a negotiated model, right? There's not really this conflict. Right, that's happening between employers and employees. And then there's other forms of conversions that are partial, I call, like employee share ownership plans, or when the state mm. decides to nationalize and there's some type of workplace participation. So there's different degrees. The Argentinian model is the most dramatic, both in how it happens, but also in the byproducts, right? In how workers I call them transformative learning organizations too. They're transformative because they, in the process of workers having to get together in solidarity, go through this moment where their livelihoods are threatened. Then when they have to get together, decide to take over a firm. Then when they have to face mm-hmm. oppression from the police or from returning owners with hired thugs, this happened in Argentina, mm-hmm. right? It happened in many of the 400 recuperated enterprises that currently exist. And then when they have to learn how to be cooperators, they were employees before. They just punched in, punched out, did their job, and that's it. Now they have to run a firm, mm-hmm. right? How do you learn all this? Well, you learn it from by doing, in solidarity, solidarity with other firms, solidarity with your workmates, solidarity with unions eventually. This is transformative, and it fundamentally changes worker subjectivities. So there's worker subjectivities change. So from managed employees to self-managed workers, right? Organizations change from transform from a closed capitalist firm to an open cooperative firm. Mm-hmm. And then communities benefit as well. And what happened in Argentina is many of these, about 60 to 70% of these worker recuperated enterprises open up their shops to the community. It's called in Argentina, La Fábrica Abierta, or the open mm-hmm. factory. Literally, part of the process of taking over the firm and the community around, you know, the different neighborhoods, the different communities that surrounded these firms came to assist these workers in their moments of occupation. So the workers then give back, their subjectivity mm-hmm. transforms. They view themselves as much more than employees, much more than punching in, punching out. But now they view their business interest, their recuperated enterprises as being entrenched in the community, mm-hmm. right? And they open up the shop to the community too. For example, many of these firms in Argentina are located in economically depleted neighborhoods. So they create recreation centers. And this is space that they use during their off time, when it's not being used to create the widgets they create or whatever they do. But also it's spaces, if there's empty space in the firm, in the cooperative, they'll use it for community centers, free medical clinics, dentists, the clinics have emerged in some of them. Hmm. And another really interesting movement, that's called a bachillerato popular, or a popular high school, also grew in parallel with, inspired by the ERT movement, by the Empresas Recuperadas. And in many of these shops, there are also schools for high school equivalency and night school for local communities that where people haven't been able to finish their high school degrees. And there's many of these that have emerged in Argentina as a byproduct of the collapse of the neoliberal system. Hmm. So you have these high schools and these primary schools that are cooperatively organized as well within these firms. So the shop opens up to the community, and then the shop, the workers also give part of their surpluses often, and in some of these, to community development initiatives. So integrating a once private firm that had this capitalist secret of what happens in scene, right? So when you look at a capitalist firm, it's always secret. You don't ever quite know what's going on in there. They open up the firm, the open factory, the Fábrica Abierta, and kind of tear down this imaginary wall, this kind of symbolic and real wall between the work, the private work inside and the public world outside, right? They integrate a productive entity more tightly into the local community. And they become much more than just a business producing widgets. Mm-hmm. It's now a cooperative producing culture, producing community well-being. And it's revived many of these neighborhoods. I think that this is, for me, the most compelling thing that we can learn from what happened in Argentina and what can happen in other parts of the world experiencing socioeconomic inequalities, closing, shuttering firms, how communities can take back these productive entities and go from creating private wealth to creating social wealth, right? So Argentina has shown the way. This is why I view them as beacons of hope for social movements. And it's not just about production, right? It's not just about production of goods to be sold on the marketplace, but it's about entrenching local businesses in the local economy and creating social wealth for local communities. Mm-hmm. I think this is important to learn. And I spend quite a bit of time talking about this in my book. And it's a model that's been replicated in other parts of the world where these more what I'm calling labor conflict recuperated enterprises have emerged. Mm-hmm. There's a case in northern Italy right now in the thick of the COVID. and they're actually in the COVID-19 crisis, but they're actually working with local authorities to assist the local community. It's called the Rimaslo in Italy. Hmm. And they were very much inspired by what happened in Argentina. They were a former car parts manufacturing firm. And they've gone from, these workers were also risking unemployment and they were going to be fired. And now they've created this local hub of community-based socioeconomic activity that spans different economic sectors in the Milan region of Northern Italy. And there are other experiences in other parts of the world that were inspired by what happened in Argentina.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be, right? Because it is so inspirational to hear that and to hear about how... just how much better things can be when we, the people, have means of production in our hands, if we want to call it that, right? And just sort of like the yes. power to make our own decisions. Because I feel like often under this neoliberal capitalist system, we are taught to forget that we have that type of power. I'm curious about yes. the current political state of Argentina right now. Because of this upheaval, have there been like massive changes in legislation? Has there been like, are the co-ops sort of functioning side by side with the big businesses, or what's sort of the state of that?
Yes, well, so while I mentioned that these emerged initially at the turn of the millennium, mm-hmm. They continued to emerge after a more sympathetic government came to power after the crisis, mm-hmm. and that was a Peronist, it was a left Peronist government under first Nestor Kirchner, and then his wife took power, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, and the Kirchner governments spanned 12 years between 2003 and 2015 mm-hmm. was much more sympathetic to cooperatives, to the cooperative movement, but to these new forms of worker cooperatives. And they helped subsidize and facilitate their production, reconfiguring their production and whatnot. But a new kind of moment in labor militancy emerged as well. Workers, when their jobs are less threatened by a socioeconomic system out of their control necessarily, right? When they have matters kind of, when they have their livelihoods taken care of, they tend to, traditional forms of union militancy, for example, or working class militancy, which is striking, for example, mm-hmm. or making demands, right? Return, mm-hmm. right? So initially in the 90s, unions didn't really know what to do. So just take a pause here. Unions didn't really know what to do with these firms because unions in a capitalist system are there to mediate between the employer and the employees, right? But when you have a firm that's run by workers, what's the role of unions? Mm-hmm. So it really questioned the role of unions. And unions were initially not sympathetic to these worker recuperated enterprises. Mm. They eventually became so when the workers themselves didn't want to leave the union and always identified first and foremost as workers and then as cooperators, right? Mm. And they kept on paying their union dues. And soon unions discovered that, well, we still have to represent these workers with, in a sense, a new owner, or a new boss, which is the state. So these workers still have unemployment insurance and social security issues to consider. They still have retirement contributions to make. They have to think about their retirement. Mm-hmm. They still have health insurance that they need and health security, right, mm-hmm. around and workplace and the conditions of workplace. So workers' compensation issues and whatnot. So that's where unions kind of came in and returned to these workplaces and assisted these workers in articulating these continued needs. Now, this government, this more kind of, let's call them neo-developmentalist, left populist government of the early 2000s into the early 2010s, allowed the Empresas Recuperadas, the movement of worker recuperated enterprises, to consolidate and to, in a way, institutionalize the process. But when they lost power to, again, a neoliberal government of Mauricio Macri in 2015, difficulties returned. This return to neoliberalism and a pro kind of business government between 2015 and just this October 2019, when they lost power again to this, the Kirchner wing of the Peronist government, did everything they could to make it really difficult for these businesses to continue. Because these businesses, in many ways, by existing, right, by these worker recuperated enterprises existing, they are a direct threat to the capitalist system, business model and system, right? Just the fact that they still exist is a direct threat. And so you don't, you know, a neoliberal government doesn't want more of these to happen because it would go against all the business interests of kind of a neoliberal way of looking at the economy, right? So many of the gains and victories that these workers had won over this 12-year span between 2013 or between the turn of the millennium and 2015 began to be chipped away. And so now we have a movement that is very much still smarting and hurting from this the previous 4 years, but with a government that's now sympathetic once again to the plight of these worker recuperated enterprises and other worker co-ops in Argentina. And so now they're putting together, and I'm working with colleagues in Argentina that are working directly with the government, and in particular in the Ministry of Labor, Ministry of Production, and Ministry of Social Development, in assisting different aspects of these businesses and their workers as well, of these worker recuperated enterprises. Let me say that also that another thing that was recuperated, and I talk about in particular recuperation. One of the things, and I talk in my book about there are six recuperative movements and seven radical social innovations. I've kind of touched on all of them in what I've said so far. One of the things, they didn't only recuperate a business for themselves, right? They recuperated in the sense of making it whole again, making it, you know, like, you know, curing it from its problems again. So we recuperate from an illness, right? Just the same way. But they also recuperated legislation and policies. They actually, the workers lobbied the state to, and through their sympathetic lawyers and social movement leaders, articulated ways of facilitating the conversion of firms into cooperatives in Argentina. One way is using expropriation law. So the same law that we have here in Canada, that any government can expropriate land from private owners for social good, for something that's for something of social benefit, right? Well, the worker said in the light of the fact that there is massive unemployment in the late 2000s, late 1990s, early 2000s, the fact that we want to revive and save and revive these firms and simply work, and the fact that we're saving you unemployment insurance and indigency, the government has a legal and moral right, has a moral right, and then they argue the legal right, to help to expropriate these firms on our behalf. And so they articulated a method of using legislation, local legislation, so local legislations at the provincial level and the national level also could do this, would pay the debts, the remaining debts of these firms, right? And then transfer them over to the workers. And then the workers would pay this back over 20 years. So almost like the state expropriates and then they take out a mortgage. The workers use it as a, you know, it's almost like a mortgage and they pay back over 20 years at a very, very modest rate of interest in that. So they articulated this process. The other thing they did was they managed to convince legislators at a national level to create a new bankruptcy law. And so the old bankruptcy law was a law of bankruptcy that was developed under the military dictatorship still, and it was still in the law that was recognized up until 2009. In 2009, the workers managed to convince the national government to reform bankruptcy laws in Argentina. So, for example, giving workers the right of first refusal. If a business is going under, the workers have a right to know it's going to be closed, and the workers have a right of first refusal to buy it out.
Yeah.
So if the workers can, I think it was, if two-thirds of the workers can get together and say, okay, bankruptcy court, we know this business is going under, we'll buy it out. And we can also, so if they didn't have the money, they could use their what they call labor credits. That is, many of these failing firms, owners would stop paying them a salary. And so what they managed to convince Argentine legislators to do was to recognize this as unpaid labor. So rather than paying them a salary, right, that would go towards that work that was done and not remunerated, would go towards the value of the firm, right, would go towards the workers buying the firm, right? And so that's what the workers of the ERT, the Empresas Recuperadas, Worker Recuperated Enterprises movement, managed to do as well. So they recuperated laws and norms and legislation. So there's a political recuperation as well. And there's other things that they also managed to do, and many things that they still have to do, and many challenges that they still face. But these are other innovations that emerged from workers themselves. That and I just want to say that there aren't many of these, right? There are only 16,000 workers in 400 firms in an economy where there's about 20 million people. Out of Argentina has about 40 plus million people. 20 plus million work. Many work in the formal sector, and many more work. Well, there's a large number that work in the informal sector. So we're all talking about 16,000 workers. And it's also a country with about 28,000 cooperatives. Many of them worker cooperatives, and these are just 400, right? So other cooperatives have emerged in so this is part of the bigger cooperative movement. But these are the most well-known and the most radical and the most kind of inspiring, because these workers became cooperatives out of need, and then learn through experience and through having to face challenges together in solidarity. So where they are right now with this new government is that they're trying to rearticulate many of the things that they had gained, that they had won up until 2015, and that they still had to work on. Now they're trying to articulate this in a more formal way by placing their own workers and their own representatives in positions in different ministries. And some of my colleagues are now working directly with the new Argentine government, the new Peronist government in Argentina, to assist not only in the challenges that are faced by worker recuperated enterprises, but also by other self-managed movements and self-managed firms and cooperative firms around the country. Increasingly, you're seeing them work together. So the worker recuperated enterprises working with agricultural cooperatives, working with other self-managed, more informal collectives of, say, garbage collectors, for example, that have organized in cooperative ways, and in other there's a vast network, parallel economy in Argentina. It's called the social and solidarity economy, that has national representation in like union, like there are groups that they have political weight, just because I said there's a large informal economy in Argentina. So people in the black market or the informal market, and so they've organized themselves in what's called the social and solidarity economy, the popular economy, and in many ways the worker recuperated enterprises are a part of that as well.
I love hearing that about specifically the sort of like the way that the union movement shifted its focus and found a way to find its place within these sort of recuperated worker cooperatives. I feel like there's a lot to be learned there as well, because there's often questions around the sort of just relationship that co-ops and unions have.
Yes.
So that's super interesting.
Yep. I mean, there's still work to be there's still work to be done in Argentina, and some unions, for example, in the textile mm-hmm. sector and in the metal, in the steel sector, right? So the steel workers and the textile workers and the graphic workers, the print and graphic workers, have been more supportive and more proactive than other unions. So mm-hmm. it's not uniform, but it is much more than what's happening in the 90s mm-hmm. and much more that happens here in Canada between yeah. the union movement and the cooperative movement. In many ways, they're struggling. They're struggling around the same issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are ways of bringing those two movements together more and more. Argentina is one of the national cases that shows a way to do that. The worker recuperated enterprises and worker co-ops and the union movement in Uruguay has also been quite strong and quite articulated, collectively articulated. In Brazil too. And increasingly now you're seeing in the States, in the U.S., coming together of unions and cooperatives in certain sectors or in certain places, like in the union co-op model that was inspired by Mondragon.
Yeah, well, we are unfortunately almost out of time. An hour went by like nothing. Before, I just wanted to leave this with, well, if there's anything else that you wanted to mention, first of all. And the other thing is, for people who would hopefully really want to read this book after listening to all of this, what's something that you want them to take away from it? And what are some ways that people can sort of take those lessons and apply them to their everyday life, if possible at all?
Sure. Let me relate it to our current situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd be remiss to end this conversation without bringing up this current situation of crisis that we're going through. And very much, I mean, I just think back a week ago and it seems like a century ago.
Yeah.
It, things have changed so much over the weekend. It's
I don't know if you want to
mention the date right now, but let me just say it's March 18th today,
mm-hmm.
right? March 10th, I was overseas. I'm in self-isolation right now with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed another universe.
Yeah.
So this is very much it's an economic crisis as we see the markets faltering for obvious reasons, but it's also potentially a social crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in a crisis of community. But I'm really happy and ecstatic to see how communities are coming together in virtual ways and in other ways. Just the fact that people are, in North America at least, volunteering to self-isolate is a show of care for others, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not about self-isolating necessarily to not get infected, although it's partly that, but it's to not spread it more, right?
Yeah.
And we seem to be acting collaboratively and cooperatively in that way, in a way that's very inspiring. But also then the alternative forms of culture, of care for the other that's emerging in this moment. I'm thinking, I do a lot of work in Italy. I've done work on similar cooperatives in Italy, and I have friends and family in Italy, and talking to them and looking at some of the images that are emerging of people singing on balconies, singing in harmony across, you know, across the street over balconies, or children creating murals and artwork and hanging them off balconies, and
mm-hmm.
where it says, you know, hang on, we can do this, be strong, right? I mean, this is amazing. One of the things, and I'm mentioning this because one of the things that the cooperative movement can teach us is how to move, well, first of all, how to organize our economy in local ways.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing that's happening, one thing that's emerging from this crisis right now is that if we can view this as positively, one positive thing is the earth is taking a break. So environmentally, We don't have, you know, the planes are stopping to fly. You know, the planes aren't flying as much as they were. Industry is closing temporarily. We're not consuming as much as we did before. That whole notion, consumerist capitalism is pausing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's giving the earth a break. So this is a moment for the earth to breathe, and it'd be interesting to see how CO2 levels have gone down during this period.
Oh yeah.
Also, thinking about organizing the economy more locally, subsidiarity, as local as you can, ways of organizing the production and distribution of goods and services that we need at a local level, keeping capital local, right? There are initiatives across Canada that we can also draw from that have, the Canadian community economic development movement that has a long history in Canada. Well, these are ways of the cooperative movement and what happened in Argentina another moment of crisis can help us learn how to be more local about how we produce and how we consume, and then organizing ourselves in more local ways. Mm-hmm. And also not taking the language from these two new phrases that has now emerged over the past few weeks, social distancing and mm-hmm. self-isolation, that if we think of those as acts of care, so caring for others, we can reposition them to be self and collective care, right? So rather than social distancing and social self-isolation, these are experiences and experiments in self and collective care, right? That mm-hmm. we want to stop this, we want to take care of the other, we want to be kind to each other as the Canadian government has asked us to do. And then the two last principles in the cooperative principles, right? Of ICA's cooperative principles, which is concerned for community and cooperatives cooperating, right? And then I would add a third, which is the unwritten eighth principle, which will probably be one of the principles at some point, which is care of the environment. I think all of these things the cooperative movement can teach us, and we can learn from these experiences in Argentina, and also from our own cooperative movement as well, that would go a long way, I think, in this moment to help us kind of rethink. I think this is a moment to pause and rethink about how can we reconfigure our economic model, our economic system. And I think I just want to leave with those thoughts that we should turn to the cooperative movement. We should look at what they did in Argentina at a particular mm-hmm. moment. I think if you read my book and if you read the crisis that these emerged from, I think we could draw, and not only my book, but other books that cover on similar themes and similar topics and with other social movements, say, this is a time to kind of reflect. And I think hopefully my book will have a place to self-reflect in thinking about an alternative socioeconomic model that we can aspire towards.
Yeah, I really hope so. Thanks again so much. And I look forward to reading the rest of your book. Speaking of which, where can people find it if they would like to do so?
Okay, well, let me say that it's a very, very expensive book right now. It's a hardback book. You can access it through my website. You can read the front matter and the preface and the introduction. And let me leave you with my website. Mm-hmm. It's www.vieta.ca. Like I said, it's expensive right now. It'll be coming out in a much more affordable soft cover in November of this year.
Cool.
Unfortunately, there's a year of lag time through Haymarket Books, and it'll be about $40.
Cool.
But if anybody's interested in reviewing the book, I could make a PDF of the book available for them. Unfortunately, they have to, for copyright purposes right now, they have to promise to review the book. but there are ways of getting it, and they could always email me. You can reach me through my website as well, and I can make portions of the book available. It's also available at your local library. Of course, we can't physically go there right now, but at all university libraries as well, and it's available online. at most of Canada's universities. And but let me know if anybody's interested. I'd be happy to make parts of it available to you right now.
Great. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that offer. And I hope someone reaches out.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Marcelo.
Yay, great. Thanks, Vesta.